It is February the 14th. It is Rosh Chodesh Adar. And we are continuing in Parshas Vayigash. We are on page 256. We actually have to look at 254 again. So a few loose ends we left from the last class. Appropriately, we will have some connections to Megillas Esther tonight, as you will see as we go along. And just a reminder, we will be ending a little bit early because of the classes being given upstairs. So last time we discussed the wagons that Yosef sent, that Paro sent to Yaakov, and the significance of the wagons. And we mentioned that three loose ends that we had from last time. One is that it says, we'll read the verses again, but one is to know what it is that Yosef sent his father. Another loose end is that Yosef gave special clothing to Binyamin. We wanted to discuss that. And then also how the news was broken to Yaakov that Yosef was still alive after 22 years by, as we mentioned, Serach Bas Asher. We'll talk about her as well. So let's review the psukim, review the verses that we did last time so that we can get our bearings. We'll start from on page 254, Pasuk Chaf Beis, verse 22, at the bottom of the page. This is referring to what Yosef gave his brothers before they went up back to Eretz Canaan to speak to Yaakov. So it says, "L'chulam nasan lo ish chalifos smalos." To each of them he gave a change of clothing. Ula Binyamin nasan shlosh meos kesef. To Binyamin he gave 300 pieces of silver. V'chamesh chalifos smalos, and 5 changes of clothing. We asked last time that why would he have done this? Have given extra clothing to Binyamin and money, meaning he's showing favoritism to Binyamin. Doesn't he remember that 22 years ago his sale was predicated on the fact that his father gave him a special set of clothing? And here he seems to be repeating history and favoring one over the others with clothing. Chav Gimel 23, Uleaviv shalach kezos, and to his father he sent as follows, Asara chamorim, 10 donkeys, nosim mituv mitzrayim, carrying from the good of Egypt. It doesn't tell us what that good is. We'll discuss that as well. Ve'eser asanos, and 10 female donkeys, nosos bar v'alechem u'mazon, carrying all types of food, le'aviv madarech, for his father, for the road. Vayeshalach es echav vayilechu, he sent his brothers and they went. Vayomar alehem, he said to them, al tirgizu v'adarech, don't, what does it say here, don't become agitated on the way. We mentioned that they shouldn't discuss his sale. Who's to blame for the sale? Who spoke Lashon Hara? Who was the one who caused the hatred in the first place? Vayalumi Mitzrayim, they went up from Egypt. Vayavo'u Eretz Canaan, they came to the land of Canaan, al Yaakov Avihem, to Yaakov, their father. Vayagidu lo lemor, they said to him, they told him, saying, Oh, Yosef Chai, Yosef is still alive, v'chihu Moshe b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, and that he is the ruler of all of Egypt. Vayafak libo, and his heart became, how does it say here?
Rejected it.
Okay, he couldn't take the news. Ki lo ha'emin lahem, for he did not believe them. Vayidabru elav, and they said to him, Eis kol divrei Yosef asher diber alehem, all the words of Yosef that he had spoken to them. Vayares ha'agalos, and he saw the wagon that Shashalach Yosef l'aseisav, so that Yosef had sent to carry him down. Vatechi ruach Yaakov avihem, and the spirit of Yaakov came alive. The spirit of Yaakov, their father, came alive. So let's take this step by step. What does it mean that he gave the brothers clothing, a change of clothing, and he gave Binyamin extra clothing and money? Now, first of all, why did he give his brothers clothing? This is an interesting thing. This is something that we really all know if we were paying attention, but it's hard to remember because we're not there, and it's hard to keep it in our mind's eye, the whole sequence of events. But they needed a change of clothing. Why did they need a change of clothing?
Probably scruffy from traveling.
Okay.
Maybe to make one more royal, be fitting.
Okay. So that's a simple answer, that they needed it in order to, because now they're the brothers of the viceroy, they should wear special clothing. But there's a more...
Did they tear their clothing in Korea?
Remember, they tore their clothing. Mm-hmm. back at the end of Parshas Miketz, if you hold the place here and turn back to page 248, when Binyamin was discovered as the thief, when he was framed and discovered as the thief, at the top of the page, it says, "Vayikru'u simlo sam," and they rent their garments. They tore their garments in mourning.
But not Binyamin.
Well, he may have torn his clothing as well.
He may have
done it as well. So the brothers had torn clothing. So now that there's no reason to mourn anymore, where are they going to get a change of clothing? They're not back home where they have their wardrobe. So how are they going to, so Yosef had to give them clothing. So that makes sense that he would give his brothers a change of clothing. But why would he give Binyamin extra clothing? And isn't he concerned with the jealousy that would cause? And why the money?
Maybe it's a test.
Okay, so maybe he's testing his brothers.
Yeah.
Right, to see if they've gotten over their jealousy.
Maybe they can actually pull teshuva for the sale of them.
Okay.
That's not fair, though.
Okay, you're saying that. Well, first, the Gemara asks this question, so we can go to the Gemara. We know the Gemara asks the question, and the Gemara answers. Hold the place here on page 254, and turn to the very end where we have Megillas Esther written in the back of the volume here.
Mordechai.
Well, what happens to teach us about Mordechai?
Because he was Haman.
Okay, you're close. You're right. You're close. Turn to page 1259. You're on the right track. One of Binyamin's most famous descendants is Mordechai. Mordechai and Esther both come from Binyamin. We've talked about this, how Megillas Esther, since we have Haman, who is a descendant of Amalek, and Amalek is always pitted against Binyamin. And Binyamin is represented over here by his descendants, Mordechai and Esther, who of course defeat Haman in the story of Esther. On page 1259, one of the bold print verses that we say out loud during the reading of the Megillah, where the one who's reading the Megillah stops and everybody says it together. If you see towards the bottom of the page, it's Pasuk Tezvav, verse 15. This is after the decree has been overturned, Haman has been hung, and now there's rejoicing. So remember, almost the entire Megillah, Mordechai has been wearing sackcloth. We were introduced to Mordechai all the way in the beginning of the story of Esther. That's when Esther was taken as queen, back in the second chapter. That's when they had the whole beauty contest. That's when we're introduced to Mordechai. Then already, that's in chapter 2. In chapter 3, Haman rises to power, and Mordechai puts on sackcloth. So from chapter 3 until here, which is chapter 8, Mordechai is wearing sackcloth. So here, he's going to change to royal clothing, because now everything has turned around. So it says, Mordechai yatzam b'lifnei ha-melech, Mordechai left the king's presence, b'lvush malchus, in royal apparel. Royal garments. What type of royal garments? Let's count. Tcheles. I'm reading the English as well. Turquoise. Vachor. That's as they say in white. Vateres zahav gidola. And a large gold crown. Visachrich boots. And a robe of fine linen. Ve'argaman. And purple. Five different materials that Mordechai wore when he left the king's presence. These special types of garments. Tcheles, which is a blue, a purple, a fine linen, gold, white, these various special garments. The city of Shushan we were very glad and rejoiceful. So Mordechai had five special garments. So Yosef here, knowing with his clear vision that in the future there would be a descendant of Binyamin who would emerge from the king's presence with these five special garments, he gave Binyamin five garments in order to foreshadow what would happen in the future. That's what the Gemara tells us. That's why Yosef gave Binyamin five garments. That's what the Gemara says. The Vilna Gaon says, he asks on the Gemara, that how does that answer the question? The question was, isn't this going to cause jealousy that he would give Binyamin five sets of clothing? and the brothers only get one set of clothing. So the Gemara answers to us, well, there's a reason for it, but it's still going to cause jealousy. Why does that mitigate the jealousy? It's still jealousy. It's still saying that Binyamin is more special than all the rest of you. Whatever the reason is, but it still causes jealousy. So the Vilna Gaon says that when Yosef gave Binyamin five sets of clothing, he didn't give him five sets of clothing that were worth five times the amount of the one set of clothing that each of the brothers got. He gave Binyamin five sets of clothing that combined were worth the same value as each of the brothers' special suit of clothing that they got. Each brother got, for argument's sake, a $1,000 suit. Binyamin got five $200 suits. He wasn't trying to cause jealousy, but he wanted to hint to this future great event, so he did it by giving Binyamin five sets of clothing that were each worth one-fifth of what the brothers got.
How okay. Do they know that? Do they have price tags?
If you know what clothing is, I can't. But you can tell though when an article of clothing is clearly inferior to another one, right? You may not know exactly how much it is, but you can tell that it's not the same. If one is $1,000 and one is $200, you're going to be able to tell the difference. I hope. Otherwise, why would anybody spend $1,000 on it?
One could be thin. Five thin layers, and right. The other one could be
right.
One
or it might have been different pieces.
Right.
It might mean the brothers were one
right.
piece and his were a five piece down. You know, who knows? Something like that. Now, but this all begs the question, why was it necessary here for Yosef to hint to this future event? Yosef felt compelled over here to foreshadow this great event that was going to happen later in history. Talking how many years later? 1,000 years later in history? Why does it have to be more than 1,000 years? Why does it have to be hinted to here? He felt it's necessary at this point to show the brothers and Binyamin and us about this future event. Why?
That's deep prophecy too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that we can understand. That Yosef was a prophet is fine.
Right.
But that he needs to show it here?
But his brothers wouldn't know what he was talking about. We know what he was talking about because we...
Well, they may have asked, and he may have told them, right? I mean, this would make people ask questions.
Yeah.
It made us. It makes the Gemara ask the question, right? So, why hint to it here? Go ahead. Okay, so you're suggesting that we have the story with Esther. You have Achashverosh, who is being manipulated by Haman, or he may have been in cahoots with Haman. Either way you put it, but whatever it is, Haman was the major enemy, but Achashverosh was certainly an accomplice. And right under Achashverosh's nose, Esther is there. He doesn't even realize it that she is a Jew, and she's going to save everybody, and Mordechai is over there, and the whole thing gets turned around, and everybody is saved, and Haman is destroyed. And Mordechai walks out with all those garments. It's right under the nose of the king. So here as well, where you have Yosef as the viceroy of Egypt, let's think of the parallels. Does anybody know, does the king, does Paro know who Yosef is?
No.
Right? Just as Achashverosh doesn't know who Esther is, Paro doesn't know who Yosef is. Right? Do you have that parallel? You have a situation where the brothers think they're about to be destroyed, and it gets turned on its head, and they go from wearing torn clothing to wearing princely garments, just as Mordechai goes from his sackcloth to these beautiful garments. So the parallels are certainly there. But what's the issue with Binyamin particularly?
Because Amalek. Binyamin will destroy Amalek. Or Esau.
Yeah, no, it's true. He'll destroy Amalek.
Yeah, but Achashverosh only came royalty because of Vashti. Vashti is the granddaughter of King Jehoshaphat.
Remember we said that the brothers were afraid that this man, Yosef, who they didn't know was Yosef, they thought that he was somehow connected to Amalek because he had something out for Binyamin. He kept saying, I want to bring Binyamin down, bring Binyamin down, bring Binyamin down. They think it's in order to hurt Binyamin. They think that since Amalek is the arch enemy of Binyamin, they think that this event is somehow Amalek trying to get Binyamin. And this person who is the viceroy of Egypt, who clearly has connections to Yaakov's family, as we've shown, and Amalek is a descendant of Esav, who comes from Yitzchak, from Yaakov's family. So they think that there's some kind of connection over here, and they're concerned about that, and that's what they're worried about. And now it turns out it's not Amalek, it's not Esav, it's Yosef. And Yosef shows the exact opposite, where you brothers, you thought that Binyamin was in dire straits, that he was in grave danger coming down. You thought bringing him on the road was going to be dangerous? Just the opposite. Just the opposite. Just like in Shushan, where it looks like it's going to be very bad for the Jews, where Mordechai looks like he's on his last legs, where Haman's going to hang him from a tree 50 amos tall, and then in the last moment, gets turned on its head. And everything turns out not just okay, but great. Mm-hmm. Here, Binyamin as well, you thought he was going to be killed, just the opposite. He's going to walk out with five princely garments. He's going to walk out with grandeur with who Binyamin can be. That's the hint that he's giving over here. Yeah, Josh.
You mentioned earlier that Pharaoh didn't know who Yosef was.
He did not know who he was. He didn't know who his family was. He didn't know he was from Eretz Canaan.
Did they say like an Ebrei?
Yeah, but Ebrei just means from across the river.
So it wasn't the office in English?
No, they didn't know he was.
He was only one of his
kind. But who else was labeled Ebrei back then?
Well, anybody from that side of the river? So that's what Rashi says. Now, what about this 300 pieces of silver? What is that? Now, that actually is relevant to what we read yesterday in Shul. Yesterday's Parsha. Parshas Mishpatim. Hold again. Hold the place on 254. And I'm sorry, today we're really all over the place. You're right. You have to pay damages. But let's see which damages we're talking about over here. Normally, when a person is responsible for damages, you have to pay for whatever you damaged. If I play baseball and the ball goes through your window, I got to pay for the window. Makes sense. But there are some times where the Torah imposes a penalty. And the penalty can be more money or less than the actual damage. Sometimes the Torah says, this is the flat rate for this particular type of damage. And it's irrespective of how much the damage actually costs. It's a penalty. One of those cases is if you turn to page 422.
Are we going back to Esther after this? Or?
Yeah, we will be back in Esther, but not yet. First we have to look at this.
For what?
422. This is Parsha, right? Mishpatim. So it says, in the bottom of the page, Pasuk Chof Ches, verse 28. It says, V'chiyigach shor es ish o es isha v'meis, if an ox gores a man or a woman and kills that person, sakol yisakel hashor, the ox gets stoned. If the ox kills somebody, we kill the animal. V'lo ye'achel es besaro, and its flesh is prohibited. Ubal hashor naki, and the owner of the ox is clean, which means there's a couple of explanations, but he doesn't have to pay anything. His ox, of course, he loses his ox, which can be a significant loss, but he didn't do it, his ox did it. So his ox gets killed. However, being sure nagachu mitmol shilshom, but if this is a goring ox, meaning that it's done it before, and the owner knows that this ox has done it before, v'huad bivalav, and the owner was warned, v'lo yishmerenu, he doesn't guard his ox, he doesn't protect him, and now he kills a man or a woman, hashor yisakel, and the ox has to be killed. V'gam bi'olav yumas, and the owner has to be killed as well, but it doesn't really mean that, as the Gemara tells us. What it means is he has to pay the value of, it's a difference of opinion whether he has to pay the value of himself or pay the value of the person who was killed. As the next verse says, im kofer yushas alav, if a penalty is placed upon him. They don't say penalty, or they say what? They say
an atonement.
Okay. The asan pidyonet nafsho. He should give a redemption of his soul. Kechol asher yushas alav. He has to give the redemption. There's a discussion, as I said, whether it means he pays the value of himself or he pays the value of the person who was killed. Either way, it's a lot of money. How do you assess the value of a person? So the Gemara says what you do is you evaluate what the person would have sold for on the slave market. Whatever the going rate is on the slave market, and slaves cost a lot of money, so you take the person and you evaluate the person, and that's the amount that the person has to pay, in addition to his ox being killed. Now, skip to Lamed Beis, verse 32. Im eved yigach hashar o ama. What if it is a slave or a maidservant that the ox gores? So it wasn't a free person, it was a slave who he killed. Kesef shloshim shekalim mitein ladonav. Then the owner has to pay 30 pieces of silver. V'hashor yisokel. And of course the ox is killed. The ox is always killed. For killing a human being, you always kill the animal. But how much money does the owner have to pay? So when it was a free person, then you would evaluate how much the person is worth. But when it's a slave, there's a flat tax. It's a 30 piece of silver, which is a very, very high amount of money. That's a large amount of money. To give you an idea, the kesuba, the marriage document, calls for 200 zuz as payment. That would be payment in the event of death or divorce, which is meant to support the widow or the divorcee. So that 200 is a lot of money. So this is 30 pieces of silver, and it's not a small amount of money. So that
is a zuz compared to.
I don't remember the exact, but it's comparable. It's comparable. So zuz. I don't remember. It's not more. It's less. Zuz is less than a shekel. So 30 pieces of silver for the death of a slave, in addition to the ox being killed. Now, Yosef was sold into slavery. He was a free man who was sold into slavery. And how many brothers sold him into slavery?
10.
What's 10 times 30?
300.
The three gives Binyamin 300 pieces of silver because he essentially forgave the brothers the money that they really owed for killing him. They didn't actually kill him, but they took away his life. They took away his freedom. So what should have been the brothers collectively paying 300 pieces of silver, he forgave that debt. But Binyamin wasn't part of that. So he gave Binyamin the 300 pieces of silver. It was, again, to show the brothers what was happening over here, that really they would have owed 300 pieces of silver. He took that money and gave it to Binyamin, who was not part of the sale, to accentuate the fact that this was being forgiven, that that was being forgiven. That's what one of the commentaries suggests, to explain the 300 pieces of silver that he gave Binyamin. Back on page 254, let's read now Pasuk Chaf Gimel, verse 23. Uli'aviv shalach kezos, and to his father he sent as follows, Asara chamorim nosim mituv Mitzrayim, 10 donkeys carrying from the good of Egypt. And we said, what is the good of Egypt? What did he send to his father?
Was it wine?
So the Gemara says he sent yayin yashan, old wine, aged wine, shedas zekenim nocha himenu. That older people, a zakein doesn't just mean an older person, it means an older person with wisdom. So das zakeinim, that the das means knowledge, but it means that an older person, nocha heimenu, that they're settled with it. It's something that settles an older person. Again, hold the place over here and turn back to Megillas Esther. Fascinating thing over here. Just a fascinating thing. Anybody in this room a wine connoisseur?
I want some from France.
I'm not either. Anybody here want to know? No, not into wine?
Not a connoisseur.
Drink a little wine. I have an uncle who's a wine connoisseur, but I don't. Okay. In the beginning of Megillas Esther, there's a big party. Achashverosh makes a big party. And you know the story. That's how Vashti gets killed, and that's why Esther is taken as the queen. So he makes this big party. Page 1252. The Megillah takes some time to tell us the scope of this party, of what it was, all the beauty and all the gold and silver and everything was going on over there. So one of the things it says is
the drinks were served in golden goblets.
Yeah, there was drinks were served in golden goblets. So it says, let's see, hold on. So let's look at that. Pasuk Zion, verse 7. Vashkos bichlei zahav, and the drinking was in golden goblets. V'chelim mikelim shonim, and they say no two goblets were alike, although there is a medrash that means he took utensils from the temple because he was celebrating the fact that the temple had not been rebuilt in 70 years. V'yein malchus rav kiyar hamelech. And the royal wine in abundance, according to the bounty of the king. The king has no limits. Achashverosh was a very powerful king, very wealthy king. And so he had all kinds of wine. There was no limit on the wine. An open bar. Vashesiachadas enones. And the drinking was according to the law, without coercion. Now what does that mean, according to the law, without coercion? What do you mean, you had to be 21? What does that mean? It was according to the law.
The preparation of the wine.
Okay, could be that it was done kosher. The Jews were able to. But the Gemara tells us.
Oh, because the Jews are there. Maybe this.
What's that?
Maybe it had to be kosher wine perhaps because the Jews went to.
The right. That's right. That could be. The Gemara tells us an interesting thing. The Gemara tells us everybody was given a wine that was older than they.
Fancy wine.
Right, if you were 25, mm-hmm. then you got a 26-year-old wine. If you were 50, you got a 51-year-old wine. If you were 90, you got a 91-year-old wine. You always got a bottle of wine that was aged more than you were.
Yain
Yashan, aged wine. Right, that's what the Gemara says. Now, I'm not a wine connoisseur, but if that's what Achashverosh did in order to make his party the best party, it must be that there's something to that. It must be that there's something. It's not just like a shtick, you know. It must be that there's something pleasurable to drinking a wine that is aged more than you are.
It's overpowering.
Okay, it could be that as a person gets older, I don't know how it works. I imagine that a person's tolerance for wine increases. For alcohol increases as they get older. I would think it does, especially if you're used to drinking. In those days, you drink water, but you often drank, you know, alcohol was a common drink, beer and wine was a common drink. That's throughout the earlier generations, as it is even today in some European countries. If a person is used to drinking, as they get older, assuming that they're healthy, their tolerance, their ability to hold alcohol, I would imagine, increases. And so the wine, as it ages, becomes a better wine, apparently, assuming it's aged properly. Again, I'm not a connoisseur, but I understand that aged wine is good. And so
Some aged
wine is good. Okay, okay.
It can be vinegar.
Okay, it's got to be aged properly,
yeah.
Right? But if it's done properly,
according
right?
to law.
Okay. So there is something to giving a person a wine, not just an aged wine, but aged more than they are. Right. Yaakov was how old at this point?
137.
He is, well, we'll see, we're going to see,
because
he's going to come down to Egypt, and Paro is going to say to him, how old are you?
Right.
And Yaakov's going to say, I'm 130 years old.
No, 130.
Now, you got to find a wine that's been aged more than 130 years. That's more than anybody else is alive. That's a long time to find a wine. Right? So Yosef found for his father an aged wine that was apparently, the measure doesn't say it was older than Yaakov. I am suggesting, based on what happens in Megillas Esther, that he sent them a wine that was at least close to Yaakov's age, if not more than Yaakov's age, in order to give him something. It would be something that Yaakov wouldn't have had in a long time. He's someone who's 25, it's not so difficult to find a wine that's older than he is. But someone who's 90, 100, 110, 120, that's very difficult to find an older wine. So Yaakov, in order to have that special pleasure, that older wine, it seems that Yosef found him an aged wine and sent it to him. But that was a special gift to Yaakov.
Rabbi, usually, and I don't know in this time period, the top wines in the area are kept. The wines that are not so great are not kept. So you're getting something that usually is much more expensive.
Uh-huh. Because it was the reason why it was aged is because it was the best wine in the first place.
That's correct.
Okay.
So this seems like a normal thing on a special occasion, a very royal banquet.
You would
think, this was sort of like a standard.
Yeah. So he that's what he sent to Yaakov. Now I imagine that he sent it to him because he knew that his father was elderly and he knew that the news was going to be shocking to his system and that this wine would be something that would help Yaakov on the occasion. And of course Yaakov would want to be thankful to Hashem that his son was still alive, and so he sent him something to make a l'chaim with. I mean, he sent them the wine. It's very likely Yaakov didn't have that kind of wine available to him.
It's also that Yaakov had been mourning for all this time.
Right.
So it was some way to get him out of it.
That could be. Remember, we had the brothers, so gesund, the brothers didn't drink for 22 years.
Right.
Remember, we had it? The brothers and Yosef, they didn't drink for 22 years until they met each other, and they didn't drink. So very likely.
A wine that was older than the
I don't know, it doesn't say, but it could very well be that Yaakov didn't drink either. And here he was sending him a celebratory statement, this wine. Okay, so now we move to breaking the news. And this will be the last thing we'll discuss this evening. So, Pasuk Chava, back on page 256, Pasuk Chava, verse 26, Vayagidu lo lemar, they told him, saying, Od Yosef Chai, Yosef is still alive, v'chihu Moshe Moch L'Eretz Mitzrayim, and that he rules over all the land of Egypt. Now, they were very concerned. They were very afraid. We're going to tell Yaakov that Yosef is still alive. Yaakov has been mourning for 22 years for his son. We're going to tell him Yaakov is still alive, and not only is he still alive, but everything is great. They were afraid of the shock and what that might do to him. Remember that back in Parashas Chayei Sarah, Sarah Imenu, our matriarch Sarah, died because what? The shock that she heard that Yitzchak had almost been killed, but then he was saved. And he wasn't killed on Akedat Yitzchak, the binding of Isaac. He wasn't killed. And that was a shock to her system. She was 127 years old. And she died. They were concerned. Yaakov is 130. You're going to break news like this to him. Who knows what's going to happen? So, as many of you know, they weren't sure what to do, and Serach Bas Asher, Serach, the daughter of Asher, she's the one who breaks the news to Yaakov. Serach Bas Asher is a very fascinating personality. We don't know that much about her, meaning we don't know much about her younger years, we don't know much about who her family was and her children, we don't know much about that. What we do know is that she broke the news here to Yaakov. We also know that she was a very wise woman. That we know as well. The prophet tells us, the Navi tells us, in Sefer Shmuel, the book of Samuel, that she, who was still alive at that time, that she was a very wise woman. You see, Serach Bas Asher lives for a very long time. The Medrash says that Serach Bas Asher is one of the people that death couldn't touch. That she went into Gan Eden alive. Very few people get to that point. But Serach Bas Asher got there. And it seems that she deserved it from this story here, from breaking the news to Yaakov, from the way she did it. She had to come up with a way of doing it in a way that would not endanger her father. Now, let me tell you that I'm not 100% sure.
That was her grandfather.
It was her grandfather, right? I'm not 100% sure about what is dangerous and what is not. Let's tell it to you. I'll tell you personally what happened. I have an uncle who passed away a number of years ago. This uncle, unfortunately, predeceased his father. My grandfather lived into his 90s, and this uncle died before my grandfather. My grandfather was lucid until the very end of his life, and when my uncle passed away, nobody wanted to tell my grandfather. Because, you know, who knows what would happen. He thought, oh, a man who's in his 90s, it's a dangerous thing. So no one wanted to tell him. And they hid the news from him, and he passed away without ever being told. I mean, he found out, I'm sure, after he passed away. But he was not told during his lifetime. Now, I was traveling during that time. I was traveling with Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, a great Torah sage in the yeshiva in Philadelphia, and I was traveling with him, and I was telling him about this, and he said to me an interesting thing. He told me that that he once spoke to a doctor about this sort of thing. He once had to break the news to an elderly man that this man's son had passed away. He once had to do that, and he was afraid for that elderly man's health in breaking such news to him. And he said he spoke to a doctor about it. And the doctor told him, fascinatingly, and to me it's fascinating, that sometimes it works the reverse, that an older person can take news like that better than a younger person. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be because an elderly person, someone who is much older, is already thinking more in terms of this world is not so permanent, there's the next world. A younger person is very much focused on what this world is all about. And this world is everything. Even though we say, yes, there's another world, we think about that intellectually. But internalizing it, younger people are not really there. Someone who's much older is thinking more in terms of that there's a future, this is not everything. And the news of, unfortunately, of a death is less traumatic to an elderly person than someone who is younger. That's what the doctor told Rabbi Kamenetsky. So he told me he's not a doctor. He told me he wasn't sure, but he told me that there is such a notion out there that it may be less shocking to an elderly person than to a younger person. So I was thinking about this because here we know that they were afraid that Yaakov wouldn't be able to handle the news, and we know that Sarah wasn't able to handle the news, and she was killed.
But maybe it's different for a sibling or someone you know.
Okay.
For your own child.
Okay, maybe it's different.
Right.
I was thinking perhaps it's also different when the news is an unfortunate news of death.
Right.
Here the news is alive.
Right. It was with Sarah also.
Right. The news here is this ecstatic, wonderful news. He's alive.
Right.
So that was the shock to the system. They weren't telling them about a calamity. And it could be, it's true, could be an elderly person can take a calamity better than a younger person. But the ecstatic news, that might be too shocking to the system. So I'm not sure about this. I'm sharing it with you because in my mind it's a little bit unclear, but it's worthwhile to be aware of these things. Now, Serach, as I said to you, was a very wise woman. The Gemara tells us that that Asher, the portion, the land that the tribe of Asher had in Israel, was known for its olives and its olive oil. And when they needed olive oil for the menorah and the Beis HaMikdash, they would get it from the portion of Asher. Asher's land was known for that. Asher's, the olive oil is always a symbol for wisdom. It's always a symbol for wisdom. The menorah always represents Torah, which is wisdom, and olive oil is always representative of wisdom. Asher, his descendants were known to be wise, and particularly the daughters of Asher. And here, Serach Bas Asher was very, very wise. Later on, the story in the book of Shmuel is that there was someone named Sheva ben Bichri who rebelled against David HaMelech, against King David. And he tried to muster up a rebellion to depose David. His rebellion was defeated, and he ran away, because now his life was in danger. And David's general, Yoav, chased Sheva ben Bichri and reached him in a city. Reached him, he got this, Sheva ben Bichri had run into a walled city. The city was closed. And Yoav came and surrounded the city with his army. And they needed to get this man. And he was prepared to demolish the city in order to get Sheva ben Bichri to end the rebellion. So the Pasuk says, the Navi tells us, that a woman called out to Yoav from top of the wall. And she said to him, she said, what are you doing here? What do you want? So he said that he has to get the Sheva ben Bichri. So she said to Yoav that she'll take care of it. And she went, and she got the people in the city to realize the plight of the city. And they took Sheva ben Bichri, they killed him, and showed Yoav that they had killed him, and Yoav left the city alone. Now, you think, well, that's a no-brainer, obviously, if you're going to save the city. But it's not a no-brainer. It's actually a very complicated law. See, the Rambam, Maimonides, writes, God forbid, an enemy of the Jews comes and surrounds a Jewish city, and says to the Jews in the city, we are going to kill every single one of you unless you give us one of you. Give us Yankel. And
by name?
They say, give us Yankel. And if you give us Yankel, we'll kill Yankel, we'll leave you all alone. But if you don't give us Yankel, we're going to kill all of you, including Yankel. So the Rambam writes, you're not allowed to give them Yankel. Better the whole city should be killed rather than we should give one of our own to them. Even though we're all going to get killed, you don't give one of your own to be killed. Unless, now Yankel could give himself up if he wants, that he could do, which would be very meritorious, he'd save everybody else. The only time that we can give over one of our own, if that person is anyway really liable for the death penalty. If that person did something that he does deserve to get killed for, then we're allowed to give over that person to save everybody else. But only if that person really did something that was liable for death. Here, this man, Sheva ben Bichri, had rebelled against the king, which is a death sentence. That's treason. So, Serach Bas Asher knew the law and knew the application of the law. The others didn't know it. And in her wisdom, she had understood the law, and she explained to everybody that in this case it is permissible to give over that Sheva ben Bichri to be killed. And that's what happened. And she's called a wise woman in the Navi. She says over there that she tells the... I should have brought the Navi with me. I forgot to bring the Navi with the words. I thought I'd remember the words. But she says... it's such a good phrase. But she says that she is... Should you remember the words? I can't remember the words. She says to Yoav, when Yoav says, who are you? Who is this woman? She says, I'm the one who brought together the tribes and Yaakov. I'm the one who broke the news to Yaakov and brought everybody together again. That's how she says who she was. And she lived all those years. She's the one, because she lived the whole time, she's also the one told Moshe where the bones of Yosef were many years later, many, many years later, when the Jews are leaving Egypt and they don't know where the bones of Yosef are. She's the one who tells Moshe where they are, that they're in the bottom of the Nile. She's also the one that when Moshe comes and tells the Jews that Hashem said, Pakod Pakarati Eschem, that I have redeemed you, And the Jews, that was a code word that anybody who says those words would be known to be the Redeemer. And Moshe said those words. Who remembered what the code was? This was so many years of slavery. Who remembered throughout the 130 years of slavery? Who would remember what the code was? She remembered it because she was alive throughout the whole period of time. Oh, she outlived the whole thing.
210 years.
Yeah, she lived all the way into the Yoav is already hundreds of years after that. Yeah. She didn't die.
Okay.
Serach Bas Asher lives on. So how did she break? What then?
Miracle.
So how does she break the news over here? So that's what everybody says, that she played an instrument and she broke the news to him through music. That she played music and broke the news through the music. And it brings it in the commentary over here? Right. So let's look at the commentary then.
Where is the commentary?
25 to 28, bottom of 256, verse
1. She played her harp and sang gently that Joseph was still alive and that he was the ruler of Egypt. Slowly, Jacob's long sadness evaporated, and he blessed her for having lifted his spirits. As a result, she was still alive centuries later and eventually entered the Garden of Eden alive. It's his bracha to her that because she broke the news to him in this way, that's why she lived all those years, because he gave her a blessing that she should live. And that's what happened. So she used music, and that's how she did it. So that was her wisdom. Not to just say it to him, but to sing it to him. What's that? But this is even more. Think about it. If Yaakov is in mourning for 22 years, a mourner is not allowed to listen to music. So she started playing music to Yaakov. Now, if he wasn't allowed to listen to music, you can bet that his children or grandchildren were aware of that, and yet she's playing music. So already that starts to trigger in him a question. Why is she playing music? And so slowly but surely, even before the words come out, there is some indication that there's something going on here. You see the wisdom. It's not just, oh, let's do it in a song. It's the wisdom of being able to trigger it slowly without the news coming out all in a rush in a way that will get him to start thinking in the right direction before the news is broken.
Why did the pasuk say he didn't believe?
It was shocking to his system. It was still shocking to his system, but he didn't die from it. He didn't get permanently damaged by it. It was just... It was temporarily shocking. That's what happened. Okay, so we're going to stop here. We're up to Pasuk Chavches, verse 28 on page 256, and that's where we'll continue next week in the next week at 7:30.